10 ought to do it, don't you think? You think we need one more?
This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today we begin an occasional series we're calling 11 for 11. Think of that scene in Spinal Tap when guitarist Nigel Tufnel shows off the band's amplifiers, which go to 11.
You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly.
So we're turning it up just one more, seeking out 11 big thinkers with bold ideas to reflect on how we live in the world at this moment in 2011. We're so pleased that Sherry Turkle is on the line to kick off the series. She's professor of the Social Studies of Science and Technology at MIT and founder and director of the Institute's Initiative on Technology of the Self. For three decades, Sherry's been studying our changing relationships with technology in books like The Second Self, Computers and the Human Spirit, Life on the Screen, and Simulation and Its Discontents. She's explored how digital culture, technology, social networking, and sociable robots are changing our notions of work, family, and identity. Today, her book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, is out. And we welcome Sherry Turkle to Word of Mouth.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, Sherry, today your third book in a trilogy about the relationship between human beings and technology was released. So first of all, congratulations. But what does Alone Together add to these previous works?
Well, what I think it adds is that in some ways it's a book of repentance. My last book was published in 1995, and at that point I was very much an optimist about the possibilities for online identity being a place really for exploration. And really in the past 15 years, I've seen that while there's so much possibility for exploration, there also are some problems because with so much connection, there are many ways in which we're making less contact. We're on our phones instead of with each other. We're texting rather than talking. We're not making eye contact because we're walking on the streets, you know, plugged into people who aren't there. There are some problems.
You are one of the people who was looked to by those cheering on the digital revolution, especially in the early days. The Sherry Turkle on the cover of Wired magazine,
yes.
You know, talking about the wealth of possibilities by creating avatars. Now wondering if we're, I guess, navigating intimacy by kind of skirting us. Is this a change of thinking or just a caution?
My book is not a Pollyanna book. It's not a dark book, but it's a book that says it's time to kind of pull up our socks and take the measure of where we are and make some corrections, because I think we have to make some corrections. And the reason that I think I got some things wrong, the reason that I think I didn't see some of the places that we ended up going, was that I didn't really fully anticipate what the mobile revolution would do.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's one thing to spend a few hours a day, even more than a few hours a day, exploring identity in a virtual space, exploring identity in a social network. That's great. To me, that was really a chance to try out new ideas, to especially for adolescents, to do the things that adolescents should do, to fall in love with people, with ideas, to really experiment in ways that were very healthy. But if you always have a mobile device with you that can take you to these new places and these new experiences, you are kind of never where you are and with the people you're with without the possibility of being in these other places as well.
And you write about connectivity offering the illusion of companionship without the demands of friendship.
Yes.
So we can be we can be speaking to people on iChat, or we can be constructing a kind of profile of ourselves on Facebook. So we have this idea that we're connected, but we don't really have to be called upon as friends. What does this distance provide for us?
It provides a sense, and often, you know, and a sense can feel good. It provides a feeling and often a reality of a kind of sociability. Because I never would argue that you don't have real sociability in social networking. You do. You have the kind of acquaintanceship that you have of chatting, of getting to know people, of talking about areas of common interest. That's sociability. But we're confused about what kind of commitment, real commitment to us, comes with that sociability. It's not necessarily the kind of sustaining sociability when you really need a friend, when you really need, you know, when kind of the chips are down. And very often the problem is not necessarily that those people wouldn't be there for you, but that we're confused about what our commitments to each other are in these places. We don't know what we owe each other. We don't know who these people are. So many of the people I interviewed describe spending 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a night, 8 hours, 9, on social networking, and then kind of getting up feeling disoriented. You know, it's not as though they feel they've wasted their time. I mean, they definitely feel that they've reached out, but they feel they don't know what they have. They just don't know what they have. And we're spending more and more of our time not knowing what we have, really to the detriment of other relationships in our life.
We're talking with Sherry Turkle in the first of our 11 for 11 series of conversations on where we are as a culture in 2011. Dr. Turkle has been called the Margaret Mead of digital culture and our techno-Freud for her study and thinking and revelations about how humans relate to computers and technology. Today, her book, Alone Together, is out. Well, just think about that title, Alone Together, such a profound thought. And you argue that our mobile devices have us living in something like a continual co-presence, which you were alluding to just a moment ago. But what does that mean for our ability to actually concentrate or even connect with the people around us?
Well, it turns out that we sort of fell in love with the idea of co-presence. We fell in love with the idea of multitasking. We fell in love with the idea that we could do so many things at once, that we would somehow be able to live these multiple lives, increase the numbers of things we could do. And it turns out that we really were wrong, that the more things you do, the more your sort of how well you do each thing deteriorates. So you have the illusion, and yet your brain rewards you. This is what's kind of incredible. Your brain rewards you for doing many things. So there's a paradox. You feel better and better about doing many things, even as your capacity and your kind of competence in doing each thing gets worse and worse. So we're doing more and more, often achieving less and less, and we are doing many things that are very important much worse. I mean, I live next to a playground, and I spent many hours doing a lot of my field work in this playground. And, you know, parents are sitting there on their iPhones, on their Blackberries. They're not making eye contact with their children. They're at the playgrounds with their kids. They're not really there with their kids. Their kids are trying to, you know, make eye contact, have their parents watch them and see how well they're doing on the swings or on the jungle gym. And the parents are trying to do many things at once and really aren't doing very well at much.
Let's listen to, this is just a quick clip from a family meeting from TV's Modern Family on a proposed ban of gadgets.
Okay, we have called this family meeting because the personal electronics have gotten out of control. Starting today, there's going to be a one-week ban on all cell phones, texting, IMing, video chatting, video gaming, anything on the internet.
How am I supposed to do my homework?
The way I did.
With a chisel and a piece of stone.
Phil.
Can't unplug my funny bone.
So we have this sense here of a changing generation, but parents are just as dialed into all of these gadgets. But what I want to talk about is the kind of anxiety of not having them. I mean, what's going on with us? Isn't there sort of a dependency that means that if we didn't have this, what would we do?
Absolutely. And actually, I think your point about the reversal of roles in Modern Family is very apt, because in my studies, I find that it's often the parents who are sitting at family dinners with their devices and the children who are complaining. I think you're going to have a generation of children raised with parents on the devices and the children telling the parents to turn it off. But I think the anxiety is very real, because you become, I don't like the term addicted, but I think you become anxious about not being connected all the time, because I think there's the fantasy that next text, that next piece of information is going to be the life changer. I think people have a feeling that, you know, that's going to be the one that's going to, you know, it's kind of like the fantasy of winning Publishers Clearing House, you know.
Tip you right over the edge.
It could be right over the edge, it's that next text. And so people become very anxious when they're unplugged.
We're going to take a short break and come back with Dr. Sherry Turkle, who teaches and writes about and studies and observes people's relationships with technology. Her new book, Alone Together, is the topic of today's inaugural 11 for 11 series of Big Thinkers on the Way We Live Now. We're going to be back in just a moment with more on that trajectory that humans are on now, forgoing flesh and blood relationships in favor of much more controlled and distant ones. So we'll be hearing about robotic pets, caregivers, lovers, and turtles. That's when Word of Mouth returns on NHPR. And we're back with Word of Mouth's 11 for 11 series and Dr. Sherry Turkle. Her new book, Alone Together, is about how technology is redrawing the boundaries between intimacy and solitude. And really at the heart of the book is a question, now that technology is reshaping the landscape of our emotional lives, is it offering us the lives that we really want? Sherry Turkle, at the beginning of the book, you tell a story of you and your then 14-year-old daughter at the Museum of Natural History's Darwin show. And at the opening, where people are lining up as a pair of live Galapagos turtles at the entrance, and your daughter and some of the other people in line had a comment that took you aback. Tell us about this.
My daughter, there are these turtles that they dragged up from the Galapagos Islands, you know, to be there. These are the turtles that were Darwin's turtles, you know, the ones that helped him figure out the theory of evolution. And one turtle is kind of hidden, the other one is sleeping. And my daughter says, you know, given how long they had to bring the turtles and given what these turtles are doing, they just could have used a robot. In other words, they just could have made a robot turtle. And, you know, clearly for the people who made this exhibit and for the grown-ups who were there, the whole point was that they brought up a live turtle. You know, this was the life that Darwin saw. But I started interviewing the kids and started going back to the museum because it became kind of a perfect place to interview children about whether these kids thought it was important. You know, what was the importance of living things for these children who were starting to grow up with Tamagotchis and Furbies and My Real Babies and all kinds of new sociable robotic toys. And for these children, there was an idea that robotic creatures could sort of be alive enough for certain purposes. And when I told this story to a vice president at the Walt Disney Company, he said that actually it reminded him of a story that had shocked him, which was that when they opened up the part of the Disney park that had actual biological animals, Animal Kingdom down in Orlando, people complained that the real animals, the biological animals, weren't as kind of lively as the robotic animals in Disney World, because the robotic animals, you know, rolled their eyes, you know, the crocodiles rolled their eyes and slapped their tails and all these kind of crocodile-like things, whereas the real crocodiles kind of, you know, just lay there and said, you know, you brought me here, you know, I'm resting, you know. So that actually in our culture there is a kind of, which is increasingly a culture of simulation, where we grow up surrounded by simulation, and young kids today spend half their time in virtual worlds where they play with simulated objects. There really is a continual comparison between the real and the simulated, in which for young people, the simulated is sometimes coming out on top.
Well, that's the thing. You know, robots don't require cleanup. They don't die on you. As you said, they're kind of alive enough. The question, though, does virtual intimacy, you know, this intimacy with a kind of perfect, controllable object, degrade the experience of other kinds? Like, nothing else quite measures up.
Half of the book, I try to tell in Alone Together, I try to tell two stories and interweave them. The story of how we're becoming more connected to robotic creatures, which I think is the story that's just starting to unfold now and is going to be the big story for the next 10, 15 years. And the story of how we're becoming more accustomed to another kind of substitution, which is the substitution of face-to-face interaction for more and more digital interaction, whether it's on our phones or online. And I think that one of the shocking things in the robot story is that people start out by saying that a robot pet is better than nothing. You know, it's better than nothing because I'm allergic to dogs, so a robot pet, I won't be allergic to it, or, you know, something like that. And then all of a sudden they start to say things like, well, it, you know, actually, I like the robot pet because you can always keep it a puppy. Mm-hmm. And then in a third stage, and it'll never die on you. So exactly as you say, things go from being better than nothing to better than something, and then maybe better than anything. Well, and so, I think that's a very dangerous progression. That's a very slippery slope to the point where we're forgetting what made relationships with pets and animals and people special.
So what do? Grab the book, turn off our cell phones, and connect with another human being, Sherry?
I think what's important to do is start to take the measure of what's really important to us as people and how, and really what we treasure and value in our relationships with people. It's the human life cycle. It's that we do have our troubles. You know, we do have limited time with each other. We do change. We do grow old. We do need to take care of each other. We're not perfect. We do need some solitude. I mean, we need to start to think about why we're not robots, how different we are from the mechanical world, and start to, you know, why we do need to hear human voices and not just text each other, why we do need to make eye contact, and to start to make the corrections. I think it's time to start to assess the value of what's really important to us and to start to make the corrections. And I think that I took my time writing this book. I think it's because I needed to see how this unfolded, you know, not just to kind of say, oh, after 5 years, you know, trouble, but really see how this unfolded so that we can start to make the corrections.
Ongoing story. And thank you so much for adding your voice to this conversation today.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
so much.
It.
It's been a pleasure.
Sherry Turkle, professor of the Social Studies of Science and Technology at MIT, where she's founder and director of the Initiative on Technology of the Self. Her book, Alone Together, Why We Expect More from Technology and Less from Each Other, is out today. You'll find more on her books, her thinking, and videos of her at wordofmouthradio.org. And by the way, we do have 10 more spots to fill for our 11 for 11 series of conversations about how we're living in the world today. What are some of the big ideas you would like to hear explored? Maybe mind-blowing inventions, new economic models, new notions of civic life, works of art, or creativity. You can let us know at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'll be back after the Marketplace Tech Report on New Hampshire Public Radio.